a great palace floating.
We just heard the overture and the prologue to Titanic the Musical, or a new musical, as it was called at the time, back in 1997, when it won 5 Tony Awards, including Best Musical. This was from the original Broadway cast recording. And the show is going to be put on, well, is being put on, by a Community Players Theater in Bloomington. And they started last weekend and have 2 weekends remaining of performances, the 12th through the 15th and the 19th through the 22nd. And we have with us on the phone the director of the show, Sally Perry, and one of her cast members who we'll introduce in just a little bit, other than saying welcome to you both on the show.
No, thank you very much.
And so you've had a weekend's worth of shows so far. What's been the reception?
The reception has been terrific. We have had standing ovations pretty much every night. And a lot of excitement. I always sort of joke that at the end of the show, I want both the audience and the cast in tears.
Well, yeah, it doesn't have exactly a happy ending, does it?
Well, it's a very emotional show in the sense that the ending is very bittersweet because it kind of takes you back to the beginning, so you can see where all the hope that was placed on the ship, both literally and symbolically.
What, if anything, is a relationship between, and I should know the answer to this question, but don't, between the musical and the film, that the most recent film that got so many awards?
It's about the same ship.
And that's the end of it?
Well, I mean, it's kind of like the story, except that the romantic triangle of the movie isn't there, and I think all for the good of the show. I mean, in the musical looks at a lot of different people rather than just the focus on the three. So we look at various members of the crew, the owner, Mr. Ismay, people in the first class, including we have 4 millionaires, people in the second class, like the social climber, Alice Bean, and then people in the third class, which is where they made all their money, a lot of Irish and immigrants from other countries who are coming to America for a new life.
And since you have already mentioned his character, we have with us Bob McLaughlin in the role of J. Bruce Ismay, who I sort of joked as we were warming up the microphones here is kind of the villain of this show. Bob, you want to talk about your character a bit?
Well, yes. Mr. Ismay is very anxious for the ship to get to New York in 6 days. He's hoping for a record speed, and he's not very shy about telling the captain how fast the ship should be going and, you know, taking the northern route and all of that. And unfortunately, it doesn't work out very well.
As we know. So what's his, who is this character that he has influence of over this sort of thing?
He was the director of the White Star Line, which owned the Titanic, and he liked to go out on all their maiden voyages of their new ships. And historically, having a ship this large was his initial idea. He thought that, as Sally said, there was a lot of money to be made in the immigrant trade, and he thought if we had a huge ship that could hold a lot of third-class passengers and steerage, and then could have this first and second-class passengers in luxury, this could make a lot of money for the line. So he had a lot invested in the ship, and he really wanted. In the play, I say that I want this maiden voyage to be a legend. And
you got your wish.
Yeah, not exactly as he wanted, but he did get his wish.
So how are most of the characters, or at least many of the characters in the show, historical figures, or the actual people?
Yeah, almost all of them, actually. And one of the things that we did as part of the rehearsal process was that all of the characters researched who they were, and they talked about it with the cast. I teach English at Illinois State to support my theater habit, and so I think that maybe part of my sort of teaching routine is that when I teach, I want students to know context and background, and I thought it was incredibly important for a musical that's set in actual history. So all of the casting, all of the cast talked about their characters and what they would do and what they would think about, and there's even one character who has a connection to Bloomington Normal.
Really?
Yes. There was a woman named Sylvia Caldwell on the Titanic who was traveling with her husband and young son. And they all survived the sinking of the Titanic, moved to Bloomington. She divorced her husband and became the secretary for Mr. Mehrl, who started State Farm.
Wow.
And then later married him. And interestingly enough, she also appeared in several plays at Community Players.
No kidding.
Yes, so we think this is kind of cool.
Yeah, well, how long has Community Players been around?
Next year will be their 89th year.
No kidding.
Yeah, so we have quite a long history. A number of people who have acted in Community Players over the years have gone on to professional careers. Rachel Crothers, who was a very famous playwright, got her start at Community Players.
And have you, Sally, been in shows as well as directing shows? Or are you mostly
side? Not in many years. I have acted once or twice, but I'm strictly really a behind the scenes person.
And have you directed other shows?
Oh yes, I directed 1776 for Community Players some years ago because I'm very interested in historical ones, and I've also done Inherit the Wind, and I used to produce professionally off Broadway many years ago. And so once I came out to Illinois, I hadn't lost the love of theater and decided to come back to it.
Since you mentioned 1776, you may or may not be aware that there's a group here in Champaign-Urbana who are creating a new musical called 1787.
Really?
We the People, yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I will be curious to see that.
Yeah, we'll look for information on that. I think it's supposed to go up. I can't remember if it's the end of June or sometime in July. And so, yeah, that's just by way of an aside here. Bob, have you been acting in a lot of the plays at the Community Players?
Yes, I have. I try to do a couple shows a year there. It's a nice place to work, a lot of fun, good, talented people. So we take pride in putting on good shows and having a good time while we do it.
And what do you do to support your theater habit?
Well, I also teach English at Illinois State.
Is that just pure coincidence or not?
We're married, is it, fact? That's one of the reasons I got cast in the show, I think.
Oh, no, that's not.
Well, that may be the reason that you're able to be on the same phone line in the same house, I guess.
That's for sure.
I did suspect, I have to tell you. I wondered if some hanky-panky was going on over there.
Well, you may have seen my line down at the bottom of my email that says, "We'll always have the movies," by Sally Perry and Robert McLaughlin. So that
I didn't actually. No, I didn't. I didn't see that.
Yes, we've written a book on World War II films together.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, now that's sounds like another topic for another time.
Well, we're always interested in a lot of history and how popular culture kind of connects with history. I mean, for Titanic, we got 50 people from the community to appear in it, plus another 20 or 25 people for the crew and the production staff. So I think there's a lot of interest around here in how history and popular culture sort of intersect.
How do you depict the sinking of the Titanic on stage?
Well, not to give away too much, but at the end of the first act is when the iceberg is sighted, and you hear it. So we have somebody who Jason Copenbarger, who is playing Fleet, the lookout. He sights the iceberg, off in the distance of the audience, and then the lights all get very dark, and then everybody is kind of out there like it's kind of like a bad dream. And then you hear this horrible sound, and Dan Virtue, who did our lights and our sound effects, made it so it sounds like the iceberg, the ship hitting the iceberg is literally going through the audience, because the sound moves from one side of the house to the other.
Mm.
And then it goes dark. And then in the second act is basically how people deal with the sinking of the ship, how it's decided who gets to be saved, who does not get to be saved, the attitudes of the various people, and then how the survivors feel. And historically, a lot of the survivors felt survivor's guilt that they were saved and that a lot of people weren't. I mean, over 1,500 people died, and just a little over 700 survived. And a lot of the people who died were some of the richest men in the world.
Hmm.
John Jacob Astor, Benjamin Guggenheim, Isidore Strauss, who owned Macy's, for the code of the time, they said women and children first, and they all went back to playing cards and smoking cigars till the ship sank.
Well, I suppose that's to their credit in a way.
It is. I'm not sure this would happen today, but it was a really interesting moral code.
Dare we ask what happens to Mr. Ismay?
He found a spot in the lifeboats and survived.
In actual fact?
In actual fact.
Uh-huh. Well, that probably says something, doesn't it?
Yes, indeed. I think that my feeling has been that anyone who didn't get into the lifeboats just didn't show enough initiative. But no, historically, when he got back to New York on the Carpathia, which was the ship that rescued the survivors, he was grilled for quite a while in the press, and really his reputation never recovered. There was a town in Texas, Ismay, Texas, that changed their name of their town because they felt so ashamed over his behavior. Yeah.
So are you featured prominently? Is your character featured prominently in any of the songs?
The one song that I get to have a very good time with is the Blame, which is as the ship is sinking, the captain and Mr. Andrews, who designed the ship, and Ismay are arguing over whose fault it is that the ship is sinking.
And it's from Titanic the Musical, which is happening at, being put on by the Community Players Theater. And this weekend you can see it, or next. We'll give you times and ticket information in just a bit. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Surely something can be done to help us. Thousands on board, trusting.
A musket that's your job, this someone must take the blame. It is you.
There was a song called The Blame from Act Two of Titanic, the musical, which is happening at the Community Players Theater in Bloomington. Shows remain this weekend. Is it Friday, Saturday, Sunday? Or no, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
With evening performances at 7:30, and then the Sunday matinee is at 2:30. And then same schedule for next weekend as well. And we have with us on the phone from Community Players Theater, Sally Perry, who's directing Titanic, and Bob McLaughlin, in the role of J. Bruce Ismay, who is director of the White Star Line, which owned the ship. The songs that are in here, do they tend to tell stories or advance the storyline, or are they more in the old school of musical where the action stops and suddenly you have people singing to each other?
Oh, no, they tend to both advance the story and help you learn something about the characters. So, for example, there's a it's kind of cinematic because it moves from like first class to second class to third class to the bridge and then back again. So we're finding out the stories of a number of people sort of simultaneously. So, for example, there is a song called it's called Barrett's Song, which is about a stoker on the Titanic, and he stokes coal, but he sings about his life up until that point and kind of what his aspirations are. Now that's a solo, but then there's a song a little later on called Lady's Maid, and that's sung by all of the third class passengers who are talking about their hopes of going to America. And it's led by one of the Kates. There are three young women named Kate who are all from Ireland, and it's led by a woman named Kate McGowan, played by Natalie LaRocque. And, you know, they're singing about what they want to be. One wants to be a lady's maid, and one wants to be a governess. And then some of the other cast members come in and say, you know, they want to be an engineer or a constable or a shopkeeper or something. And, you know, they're all very excited about how they hope that their life will transform.
I will be a proper person. People will look up to me. What a girl, that girl McGowan, Katie Violet Maud Marie.
I want a shop to call my own.
One of the more touching stories that I remember, which I heard about first through the film, but then also as you would read, you know, this about it later on, that are the people who were in the orchestra mm-hmm. on the ship, where they, at least as I got the story, were almost literally fiddling and as the ship went down. Do they figure in this show at all?
Well, the way
and do you have musicians on stage?
In fact, the way that Sally wanted to the show to look and the way that Bruce Parrish, our set designer, put it together, the orchestra is kind of upstage center. So we see the conductor and the orchestra playing. And there are a couple of occasions when the orchestra leader actually has dialogue or songs. And so our conductor, Chad Kirvin, will turn around then and interact with the characters and then go back to conducting the orchestra. So yes, we're very aware of them playing during the second act as the ship is sinking.
So I'll have to keep that in mind in case Champaign Urbana Theater Company ever decides to put on Titanic the musical and I put in to music direct it, that I have to have a clause in my contract that says no acting.
Well, you know, actually that was one of the reasons I was so excited to work with Chad on the show is that he also performs at the barn too, and so I knew that he was both a talented musical director as well as an actor singer, so he was, you know, sort of ideally cast for the show.
Yeah, that doesn't happen all that often, I don't think.
No, and I think it was one of the reasons that I felt that Titanic was, you know, something that we could actually accomplish on the community player stage.
So, which leads to the question, is it a difficult show, technically speaking?
Technically speaking, it's difficult in all areas. There's a lot of singing, and it's very challenging singing for, you know, people like us. Most of us are not trained singers, and Chad has done a very nice job of whipping us into shape. It's a big show with a lot of people, so Sally has faced the challenge of getting people on and off stage and keeping the show moving quickly, and she's done a terrific job of doing that. And then, yes, because we can't actually show the ship sinking or all the various, you know, parts of the ship, it's an enormous challenge for our lighting designer and our costume designer, Dan Virtue, who's done the lights, Opal Virtue did the costumes, and they both did a terrific job of making the show look so good and using those elements to help tell the story.
Yeah, I wondered if, I was thinking it might be a particular challenge, given that so many people will have seen the blockbuster movie with all the special effects and the water pouring through and the boat slanting this way and everything, to not disappoint, you know, with a suggestion.
Well, you know, I think that... Well, at least for me, the story itself is so powerful that, you know, whether the stage tilts or not, because on Broadway they actually had a hydraulic lift and the stage canted at an angle and everything.
You're saying you don't have one of those?
Well, I don't want to give everything away. But, the stories themselves are so powerful, and I think that the way that with the set and the lighting and everything work, that you get a sense, and I mean the incredible sadness when the passengers are separated from their loved ones and everything. I think that tells the story so powerfully. So whether you see, you know, a vortex and the ship actually sinking, really becomes beside the point, because the story is about a ship that shouldn't sink that does, but the bigger story is really about all of the people on it and how their lives were so tremendously impacted by it.
And it's Titanic the Musical at the Community Players Theater, Community Players Theater in Bloomington. And shows remain this weekend, Thursday through Sunday, and then next week also, Thursday through Sunday. Evening performances Thursday through Saturday at 7:30, Sunday matinee at 2:30. For tickets, what does one do?
One can call the box office at 309-663-2121, or you can visit us at www.communityplayers.org and order tickets online.
And many thanks to Sally Perry, who's the director of the show, Bob McLaughlin, who is playing the character of J. Bruce Ismay. And I wish you luck with the remainder of the show.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll go out with one of the choral numbers, the Complete Company singing Godspeed, Titanic, from Titanic the Musical, here on Live and Local. Seems to be my day for technical difficulties. That was from Titanic the Musical, which is being put on by Community Players Theater in Bloomington. You can go out and see it this weekend or next. Communityplayers.org for more information. Our broadcast on Live and Local is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, an authorized Karistan Broadloom and Rug dealer at 11 West Port Court on Bloomington's east side. Sweeney Brothers, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. On Thursday night at Canopy Club in Urbana, there's going to be a show that features Chicago Farmer and Jake Willis and Mike Armentrout. And Chicago Farmer is with us. His alt name also happens to be Cody. And Cody, I forgot what your last name is.
Cody Diekhoff.
Diekhoff. D-I-E-K-H-O-F-F.
You got it.
All right. Yeah. Well, I remembered that part. Thanks very much for coming in.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, of course, you have to explain the name, Chicago Farmer.
Sure. I grew up in a small town of Delavan, Illinois, which is a small town west of here, south of Peak in Illinois, about 1,900 people, no stoplights, long history of farmers and family farmers. And when I decided to move to Chicago in the early new millennium, my friends kind of pegged me as the urban cowboy, because I have these small-town roots, and I guess I'm kind of a country boy at heart. So when I moved to get ready for the move, they started calling me the urban cowboy, and I said, that's been taken
yeah,
by one Mr.
That.
John Travolta. So someone said, how about Chicago Farmer? And the name just kind of stuck.
And there it is.
Yes, sir.
And you don't say the Chicago Farmer. You just say
no,
Chicago
it's just Farmer. Chicago Farmer.
I mean, with the name, I actually thought it was a whole band for reason.
Well, the original idea was to move to Chicago and start a band and call it Chicago Farmer, because it just seemed to make sense. But when I moved up there, I lived in a loft with about six other guys who happened to all be roommates of mine and happened to all be musicians. So after living with six musicians, I just kind of been going solo ever since.
I was going to say, well, there's your building band. There must be a catch somewhere.
Right. There's a lot of music going on, but, you know, seven guys in one place, one bathroom, along with everyone's girlfriends, I decided I'll just kind of go solo, and been doing that ever since.
Well, except that I think you made reference to a wife now.
Well, correct. I am a happily married man.
And so you left Chicago at some point.
We did. My wife got an opportunity to teach at Illinois State in Bloomington Normal, and so we decided, you know, it's kind of in the middle of the state, and I'm always heading to St. Louis or Indianapolis or Davenport, why not just be right in the middle? And kind of back to my roots, and my family is all located in central Illinois, so decided to make a little change. And so now we're kind of in the middle. We did the extreme small town, the extreme big city, and now we're back in the middle.
Yeah, nice, comfy sort of town. Well, this seems to be the day to have either Illinois State University professors or husbands of, because we just talked to two of them. What does your wife teach?
Okay, she teaches English, and she also teaches at Heartland Community College, and she also teaches a class online.
Well, I'll bet they know each other, because the two I just talked to both also teach English at Illinois State.
Okay, that's so, quite possible.
Yeah, well, in any event, any of your family farmers?
Yes, both of my grandfathers are farmers. One has passed away. My other grandfather just retired from farming at the age of 85. A lot of my uncles are farmers, and I did a lot of helping out myself. I never grew up on the farm, but Grandpa's was always the place to go and the place to work and have fun on the farm. So,
well, let's hear a sample of your wares.
Sure, surely. This is a song, and I also come from a long line of just hardworking people, and it seems like everybody from my hometown either works on the farm or on the factory. And like I said, I spent a lot of time on the factory, and I spent about a week. Actually, I spent a lot of time on the farm. I spent about a week working in the factory at good old Caterpillar Incorporated in Peoria. I never really got a paycheck because I only worked there for a week, but I got this song.
Well, they should have paid you for at least a week.
Get me through. Ooh, you spend enough. Well, you do one thing wrong and they take away your rights. Assemble in the morning, reassembling at night. They say, by the way, you're gonna work Sunday too. You spend another week with the symbol Eli Blues. Been sighing, been dying, been panting for a rest. While a boss man is smiling, got his feet on his desk. I wish for one day he could walk in my boots. He wouldn't last an hour with the symbol Eli Blues.
Chicago Farmer, also known as Toady Decoff in his normal life, I guess, performing here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. He'll be at the Canopy Club in Urbana Thursday night. Doors open at 7. Show starts at 8 o'clock. And you've got a couple of other guys with you. I assume that they're starting things off.
They are, correct. Yeah, we're trying to do more of an early show. I've been playing, I play a lot in Bloomington. I appreciate you guys giving so many shouts out to over to Bloomington lately. I've been listening.
Well, we
it's good. We
do
need,
our
we
best
need all the
to
help we can get
spread
over
the show
there too.
Around.
But yeah, I play over there a lot. I'm actually playing there on Friday as well, and I'm just, you know, I've been up so late in so many bars that it's time to just try to pull out a really good listening crowd, and so we're trying to get folks out early so, you know, the youngins can still go back and study or go party and do whatever they want to do, and the older folks can still be in bed by a decent hour. So
I would say the younger folks are the ones who are more likely to show up at 11 o'clock or something like that.
Yeah, well, they don't normally show up at 8, but we're working on that. We're trying to get them out at 8 o'clock, and we'll see how we do.
Well, I know often with shows either at Canopy Club or some of the other clubs around, I think, oh, man, I'd really like to go see those. Nice. I see it starts at 11 o'clock.
Right,
you've got to be
yeah.
kidding.
I used to be all about it, but I'll admit, and after playing 5 or 6 nights a week, I like to get to bed at a decent hour.
Yeah, there's something to be said for it. Do you have kids yet?
I do not. A small puppy, and kids are a topic of discussion often, but we'll see where that leads.
Well, I wondered if that had anything to do with sort of the earlier hour.
No, when I was real young, I played electric guitar. I played in a rock band, and, you know, my head and my body need a little rest once in a while.
You're getting old.
Maybe. I think I can still hang with the best of them. You know, I'm playing a summer camp music festival in Chillicothe this year with some great artists, and I think I have a set that doesn't start until like 1 in the morning. So, you know, I still do that once in a while. I like to play music no matter what, but if I have my way, which I do at this show, it'll start at 8 and be over around 11:30, so.
You know, that song, Assembly Line Blues, took me right back to when I was finishing up high school and then for 3 summers worked at the Pet Ritz Pie Factory in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. It's not the same kind of assembly line.
Sure.
But I did work that assembly line initially for a couple of weeks just watching pie crusts go by,
mm-hmm.
and then ended up cleaning those assembly lines for the next 3 summers, which was actually much better.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the time clock thing, and I remember working for a publishing company in Chicago, and when I went from being hourly to salaried, and the receptionist reminded me as I was headed for the time clock, she said, "You don't need to punch that anymore."
Oh, nice.
And I literally kicked up my heels going out into the elevator.
The habit was still there.
The habit was there, and it's funny how I mean, there really are lots of divides between, you know, what people do, whether they're working for Caterpillar on the assembly line or for working for Caterpillar higher up.
Absolutely.
How much of your music comes from direct experience like that?
I would say most of it. I have some very fun and uplifting songs, but I also have a lot of songs that are more serious and more painful and have more of a message. But if it didn't happen to me, it happened to someone close to me. So I think most of them are about me and my experiences, but the other songs are, if it didn't happen to me, you know, it happened from someone I know who I saw, who I, you know, looked into a little bit deeper. So it all comes from something I've done or did.
And how long have you been making music?
I've been doing it full time for about the last 5 or 6 years, and I started playing probably late high school. I got a really late start. I was always writing little things, little poems, little jingles and stuff like that in my head, but I never really picked up the guitar until probably junior or senior in high school. And pretty much from then, once I started putting the two together, it's just been pretty much nonstop since then.
And what swung you around from the rock band, the rock scene, to acoustic?
I had one of my friend's fathers had an old National guitar, a National acoustic, and he played Hank Williams one day for me, and it was just blew me away. I was upstairs with his sons, and we were, you know, listening to some heavier stuff, some punk rock, some hard rock, and
some real music.
Yeah, and we walked down the stairs, and here he was, and he was just belting out these Hank Williams songs, and he was, you know, a really hardworking guy, very religious, spiritual person, and he was playing a lot of these, you know, amazing Hank Williams gospel tunes, and pretty much from that day on, I went with the acoustic guitar.
You were telling us as we were setting up, you actually, I mean, literally sold the electric and bought this one, and
yeah, traded in the electric for the acoustic, and you know, I was very fortunate to have parents who accepted that this is what I wanted to do. I didn't want to do anything else, and when they heard me screaming in the basement instead of telling me to do something else, they encouraged me and they helped me with getting, you know, guitars, and they helped me, and it's really made a big difference.
Yeah, that's terrific.
Yeah.
What do you got next?
Let's see here. I got some new songs. I'm sure a lot of them are new to you all. I play this folk festival down in Kentucky every year. It's called the Whispering Beard Folk Festival, and it's had artists like Guy Clark and Peter Rowan, and they asked me to come back and do a benefit show because they've been having a lot of trouble with they're trying to raise money to stop mountaintop coal removal in Kentucky, and so they asked me to write a song and come down and perform it at the benefit, and they told me that since I am from the extreme flatlands of Illinois, I am welcome to put my own little twist on it. So I did, and I don't think they knew what they were in for, but
I have a feeling, I have a guess where this song might go, but let's see if I'm right.
Anyway, it's kind of a protest folk song, and it's been going over pretty well. I got drunk, lost my fishing license. You should have seen all the lights and the sirens. Well, the limit was 6. I caught 7. Now I don't know how I'll get into heaven. Who makes the rules that we all follow? Who owns the waters that we all swallow? Who owns the land? Who owns the crowd? Tell me who owns these mountain tops. Who in the hell could be forgiven?
ticket for a busted headlight. It's 11 a.m., sunny and bright. Limit's 55, I was doing 57. Now I don't know how I get into heaven. Who makes the rules that we all follow? Who owns the waters that we all swallow? Screaming out questions like I often do. I turn my guitar up way past 11. Now I don't know how I get into heaven. Who makes the rules that we all follow? Who owns the water? Got back my fishing license. Now security around me's been tightened. Seems poor criminals are kept on a leash. Rich criminals are catch and release. And who makes these rules?
Cody Dekoff, who is Chicago Farmer, here with us on Live and Local, live in our studio, and you can go out and see and hear him live Thursday night at 8 o'clock at the Canopy Club in Urbana on the University of Illinois campus, along with Jake Willis and Mike Armentrout. Is that how he says his last name?
Yes, it is.
Armentrout. And that was not where the thing that I thought might happen in that song, since you had just said, you know, in the flat of Illinois, I thought you were going to make an analogy to, you know, what could happen if you blow off too many mountaintops. It could end up looking like Illinois.
That's pretty good.
That's what I thought.
I will not steal that.
But I like
but
that
I
you did.
I admire that.
I like that you can admire that. Well, you have permission to steal it since I have no aspiration whatsoever to write songs if you're ever called upon to write another mountaintop removal song.
Okay, good deal.
Which is not that this is actually the second mountaintop removal song I think we've had in about 3 weeks, something like that.
All right.
And I think it was the Honey Dewdrops.
Okay.
Name of a duo. Have you heard of those guys?
I believe I have.
Yeah. And they're rather passionate about that cause as well. It's just something that I found astoundingly unbelievable.
I just can't see anything right about it. It boggles my mind. And they were extremely, obviously, down there, they're extremely passionate about it, and now I am too.
Well, some people are passionate about making sure that you can still do it.
Right, that's true.
That's the amazing thing.
And that even boggles my mind even more.
Yeah, well, so you're in the long and fine tradition of folk protest songwriters.
I suppose.
Now and then.
I guess Bob Dylan said they're all protest songs, even the love ones, so I guess. Even the love songs, I guess, are some at some point, so.
Well, we'll let you take us out with another one in just a minute here.
Sure.
I do need to say that our show today is made possible with support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector, the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. Quick rundown of some of the other events going on in our listening area. And as always, I encourage you to let us know about other things. Cody kindly said that he noticed that we're covering some things in Bloomington, and we try to cover Springfield and Decatur and any other place that's in our listening area. This calendar happens to be heavy on Champaign-Urbana, other than the Diary of Anne Frank, which is at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, being put on by the McLean County Diversity Project tonight and tomorrow at 7 o'clock, and Opus 24 Spring Choral Concert at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Decatur at 7:30 tonight. We also have the Paul McKenna Band playing Scottish music at the Independent Media Center in Urbana tonight at 8. Old Number 7 plays bluegrass at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana tonight at 9. Parkland Big Band is at the Iron Post, also in downtown Urbana, tonight at 7 o'clock. And the Woody Woodward Organ Trio will be at the Iron Post tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock. And then Bentley's Pub is the weekly host of the traditional Irish music session that's in downtown Champaign Wednesdays, also at 7 o'clock. This is Illinois Public Media, WYLL-FM, and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266AF Urbana and W293AF Danville. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and as always, we thank you for your support of this show and of this station. We got a few minutes here.
All right.
What would you like to take us out with?
A good-looking, busy calendar. Sounds good.
Yeah. Well, we could always use some more things. That's not the name of the song, though.
No. What are you guys feeling? Something upbeat? Something fun? Something?
Yeah, something fun. Something fun and upbeat.
Let's do it.
I was going to say love song, but then we only got a couple of minutes. Now we'll probably go over 10 minutes, right? Love songs go on and on.
This is a mix of a love and protest and upbeat fun song.
I love it. We got it all in one.
Well, I was walking down Prairie Street. It was a lunch hour we were to meet. I got there early to bring her joy. I started hurting when I saw her flirting with a bleach blonde surfer boy. He had big muscles, he had a tan. Got to a scuffle and I got banned for going crazy, for making noise. So this isn't Florida, it's not California, it's Illinois. Ran off together, they went up north, up to Chicago, so he could surf. They left me here out alone again. She said she loved him, 'cause he could hang 10 Lake Michigan. But shorts and sandals were his only clothes. So in November, he up and froze. Dark tan turned so pale and old. She couldn't accept him, and so she left him out in the cold. Well, me just being the guy I am, I went and found him, lent him a hand, taught him what Illinois is all about. Got him a whiskey, took him out to Dixie's, and I thought he might. We started drinking, we talked all day about how we let her go get away. Away with murder, away with sin. We kept on drinking, we started thinking, plotted revenge. She was a school teacher over in Urbana, but on the weekends worked the Capacabana. And now her students, they can't forget. So we put a mixture of her naked pictures on the internet. Now he's my best friend, party and talk. He's got 7 piercings and a mohawk. We make fun of bleach, blind surfer boys. This isn't Florida, it's not California, it's Illinois. Yes, he's my best friend, party and talk. He's got 7 piercings and a mohawk. Got nothing against bleach, blind surfer boys.